This episode is brought to you by HP Plus. In a world full of smart devices, isn't it about time your printer got smart too? Now printing is smart with HP Plus, and the HP Smart app is how it all happens. You can print from your phone with just a tap, no matter where you are, even from your garage / home office / yoga studio. Huh, that is smart. HP Plus. Learn more about smart printing at hp.com/smart. This episode is brought to you by PayPal. These days, choices are everywhere. Like, for instance, the milk in your coffee. Would you like it from a cow, a nut, a tree? Everyone wants options. And now your customers have a new option in the way they pay. With PayPal in person, just generate your unique QR code in the PayPal app for them to scan and start accepting PayPal in person today. Learn more at paypal.com/us/getQR code.
Welcome to episode 187 of the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today, we welcome Alec Stoitziadis from Dogleg. They're an amazing band on Triple Crown, and recently, for the 7th annual Washed Up Emo Awards, which is only voted on by the fans, won multiple awards. And so I said, it's high time to find some quality time together to chat about the band, their history up to this point. So if you're not familiar with them, they're from Detroit, Michigan, and they released a record called Melee last year on Triple Crown Records. One of the best new bands out there right now. So Dogleg and Alec's words are worthy of your time. Thank you to all the Patreon supporters out there. If you want to help the podcast and this endeavor, head on over to patreon.com/washedupemo. This is episode 187 of the Washed Up Emo podcast with Alec Stoitziadis from Dogleg. I will disintegrate, you'll make your move, and I will fade out. Well, any moment now, I will disintegrate. Don't worry, I'll take it out.
That's sacrilege. I would never do
such a thing. I know. I texted John Gaviglio like a second ago, and I was like, dude, I'm getting, I got Alex from Dogleg on. He's like, awesome.
Yeah, dude, I it was so cool because we were playing a show with Bars of Gold, and this was before we got signed and announced that we got signed or anything like that. And I got just a message from John being like, hey, do you want to meet up at a sandwich shop, and like I can give you like all these posters that you can put around town and we can just talk music. And I'm like, That sounds amazing. Yeah. I was just like, this is like the person that I look up to for like how to play guitar and like how to run a band and basically how to make music. And here he is just right in front of me, just sitting down, just talking shop. I'm like, hey, we're both putting out records, I guess. That's pretty cool. And I'm like, yeah, I guess we are. And like the middle schooler in me was just like, holy shit. How did this course of events happen?
That is so crazy. Awesome. Because yeah. I think, I mean, you might know this, but I worked at Equal Vision for a bit.
Yeah.
And known them forever and known the label forever, and then got to, you know, hang with Bear versus Shark, and it was just one of those records that, you know, watching their performances, and I was always frustrated, is why wasn't there more of a following? Like I just didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And the whole label didn't understand it. And I don't want to bring this up in a negative sense, because it's amazing. When I started, you know, hearing about you guys and where you were from and like the bands you looked up to, and to think that you guys were, you know, influenced by that, then it made me feel better about us working till God knows when at night, working these things or pushing them on Warped Tour or whatever thing we were trying to do. There were people out there listening.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, is that it's... We think it's kind of crazy because we totally saw that for sure. Like, we saw how it's like... People in the general sense kind of like respected them, but at the same way kind of feared them in a way, you know, where it's like they didn't have just droves of people just like loving them and going crazy for them. But the people who do know them just have just complete love for them and know exactly what's going on. And that's kind of what we expected when we put out our album. We were like, you know, we aren't really expecting to get a huge following, but we're hoping that the people that do listen to it and do get it really love us. And so it's interesting to see just like this huge wave of people that really seem to get the record and like it. And I'm just like, wow, like totally unexpected, like totally not what we thought was going to happen at all.
Right. Right. And I feel like it came from a place where in Bear vs. Shark, and I feel like you probably feel the same way of like, it came from this place where you just wanted to do it. And growing up in some of these towns and places that you can easily say yes, but like, can you explain like mm-hmm. that feeling and just like, we have to do this?
I feel like it was very homey. Like every single recording process that we've went through, whether it was like just me alone and starting out everything, or like Melee, where we were all basically like huddled in our garage or in our basement, just trying to feel out what the best way to record each part of this song was going to be. It was always like, yes, like we are in the mode to make something that is really great, even though we're not like utilizing like the most high fidelity recording services. We're not like going to crazy studios. We're not paying off a bunch of people. We're literally just gathered in our basement with a bunch of borrowed equipment, trying to make something that sounds like more than the sum of its parts. And in that whole process, it just really felt like we were just doing it to do it. We were not doing it for like any type of expectation whatsoever. And so that's why I'm so proud of this thing. And like, I'm so proud of how far we've come, because like it's awesome to see all these people that get it. And it's just crazy to see that like, they don't know the background to that. They don't know like, hey, we spent all this time and over the summer just trying to mix the hell out of this thing and really right. make it sound good from a basement, you know? So it's just crazy. It's crazy to see.
What about finding out music early on for you? And what was that like in Detroit? What was it like? Was it family members? Was it friends?
So I had a really good friend. His name was Luke. And that was kind of my gateway into music in general. Like his dad played the drums and played guitar and had like a little really, really tiny, like, quote unquote, recording studio in his house. And we would go there and just kind of mess around. We didn't really have like any plans or like any idea of what we were doing. Like he had a bit of formal drum training. I had nothing whatsoever. So I was just kind of messing around. So from that, we played like a lot of Rock Band. And mind you, this was like before middle school. This was like elementary school era. Mm-hmm. So we play like a bunch of Rock Band. And that's kind of where we learned like rhythm and like how to play the drums and how to kind of put together a song. And we learned like our favorite song. Like my first favorite song probably was like Reptilia by The Strokes, just because like it was on Rock Band 1 and it grabbed me. And I was just like, wow, this is an intense performance. This is intense the way he sings, the way it's all growly. And I just wanted to find more of that type of music. So kind of searched and searched. And then more video games kind of influenced the way that I listened to music rather more than anything else, because I would play Burnout 3 Takedown. I think I made a tweet about this, but
the game is so good.
That soundtrack is one of the greatest soundtracks I've ever heard to any type of video game or any type of really like media, just because of just how perfectly curated all of the intense and emotional songs are. I mean, like they had MCR on there. They had a Futures cut from Jimmy Eat World. Like it was awesome, but they also had some really, really deep cuts from like the English and UK hardcore bands. Like, oh God, what was the name of it?
Funeral for a Friend?
I'm so forgetting it. Yes, that's it. Funeral for a Friend. Exactly.
You're welcome.
Funeral
for a Friend. Podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They had Funeral for a Friend. They had From First to Last. Like they had so many bands that I was just like, I don't know who these guys are, but they sound amazing and I want more of it. So from there, it was just like, as I got older, I would do like YouTube deep dives or just Last FM dives and just find a bunch of bands. And that's how I stumbled across Bear vs. Shark. Was I was just doing a YouTube dive and I just saw the artwork for the first album. And it really struck me because I was like, this is like very like abstract and cool. I definitely want to check it out. And then before I even listened to it, all the comments were like, this is, I can't believe more people don't know about this. This is amazing. And the song was Kylie. And I was just like, this is kind of like a slower song. This is crazy. And then the chorus hit and I was like, Jesus Christ, where has this been in my entire life? Like, where has this raw emotional power in music been? And so from there, I like found the whole albums and everything. And the rest is kind of history. I was just searching for something that just gave me that same kind of feeling of just like intense emotional outpouring.
That's amazing. I mean, the idea that, what year did you find Kylie?
Oh God, that was like in the middle of middle school, I would say. So you got to look at the calendar. I'm 23 now. So, probably you, I would have to see, maybe like 2011, 2012 ish, probably, maybe earlier. I don't know. It was around the time when like Cloud Nothing's released Attack on Memory. That I remember that album also had a huge impact on me. And that was kind of the time when like I was really, really getting into like the post-hardcore indie scene of everything and just finding more and more of that music. So like probably like 2012, 2013 ish.
So finding that stuff, because a lot of times people on the podcast, they're in certain eras. You know, it was sometimes it was a magazine and they had to have a leap of faith. Sometimes it was at the show and they saw a band open. For you in that search era, what curation did you look for? Because that's why I think I'm still relevant personally, just because I think people still need someone to kind of show you the way. You can go definitely down a deep dive, which I do all the time. I'm like, oh my God, I just found this band. I found this band. But then you sometimes want to go back to center and say like, okay, where do I need to go? Or what's the, and you know, did you feel that when you were kind of like in those deep dives and finding things? Like, what was it? What did it feel like? I know you told me you felt like when you heard Kylie, but what was it like sort of like going through the mess or going through the rest? Do you get what I mean?
Oh yeah, exactly. I think Last FM definitely helped because they had that, that like similarity feature where it's like, oh, here's artists that you that we think you'd like based on that. So like from Bear vs. Shark, it was like, oh, Cap'n Jazz is a top like similar band, and like Small Brown Bike is a top similar band. They're also from Michigan. Here's some local bands from Michigan that you would know, like Brave Bird or something like that. And I'm like, okay, like, and I listened to all of them and I was like, yeah, these are definitely similar. They're different feels, but like they actually like get me closer to where I want to go with music, you know, like I get it. And then from there, I would just kind of look at like, okay, what did the artists actually say of like their influences? Like, who do they know? Well, Bear vs. Shark would mention like Fugazi. Okay, so I go do a deep dive on Fugazi. Turns out now they're one of my favorite bands of all time, you know, like immediately found the respect that they had for them. MC5 was another band. And I'm like, shit, how have I never heard of this band before? You know, it's like, like they were literally in my backyard, except it was the 1970s and I wasn't there. So like, here's Bear versus Shark to show me the way.
Right. Yeah. What about like, let's say you found Fugazi, and for me, it might have been a song on a mixtape, or I might have had one CD. I might have had instrument, or I might have had 13. Probably had 13 songs. I probably had 13 songs, rather, not instrument. And that's all I had. And it would just be repeat, repeat, repeat. Or I did that with other bands that makes me sound dated, but we won't do that. So for you, if you said, okay, fuck, they said Fugazi, like, what did you do first? And how did you, because I get overwhelmed when, when I find out about you guys, I'm like, okay, fuck, I got to go to the 2016 release. And then you kind of get overwhelmed.
Right.
What did you do when, like, and when you started diving in, was it 17 tabs open?
Yeah. YouTube and Last.fm were really like the major resources for me. There was also absolutepunk.net had like a free Music Friday thing, and I would always check it out. And anything that was tagged like indie or punk, I would check out. And that's how I found Great Big Pile of Leaves. They had like their album was up for free for a little bit, so I found them. And just like just anything that was in that like indie punk realm, I was just like, all right, I'll check it out and I'll see what they have, because the internet will just let me have a taste of it. And if I really like it, I'll keep it. If I don't, throw it out and just find something else, you know?
Yeah. I love the things you're mentioning make me laugh because you were like my demo. Like when I was at EVR, it was like we would count the positive and negative comments on an Absolute Punk post. So if we posted brand new Bear versus Shark song, we would count and be like, oh, cool. 20 people said it was cool. Then like five people said it sucked. And then we'd be like, damn it, it sucks. You know, because there wasn't that like, there wasn't as much like you couldn't tweet out. You couldn't, there wasn't as much, you know, information coming back to know what was going on.
Right.
So to know that you like found like that's the. That at that time, that was a huge discovery thing. And I think that they put those punk bands on there was a huge deal. And that they listened to smaller labels for songs like that. And it meant something. And again, it wasn't instant. It's not like I knew that Alex in Michigan was super into it. But it was like we felt that those things were making a difference. So for you to say AP.net... you know, Burnout, like you talked about Guitar Hero and Rock Band stuff, like that was sort of like your curator.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's crazy because most games, like before those like sports games and music specific games kind of always came with their own soundtracks. So it was like, okay, this song is good and I'll remember it from the game itself. But once they started putting like actual songs that people know in it, then it's like, wow, this song is good. I remember it from this game. Can I find more? Like that's the extra step that they really gave to it. Cause like every new Burnout game had a new set of songs that I would just go and find out about, you know, like the sequel to Burnout had like Finch and Block Party. And I was like, who's that? These songs are awesome. Let me go check them out. And then that's you would so just cool. find albums from there. It was such a cool tool, and I I wish that EA made better games now so that we could have more songs in there that are new and fresh that we could that you can find out about. You know, like I'm hoping for like the next skate game to have like more of a newer flash on like things. You know, like new bands that are up and coming. Like, if it had like a Pup song in it, then some kid who's like 10 and is playing Skate 4 will be like, holy shit, who is this band? Like, who, like, what are they? And just find out more about them, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's, and I think it's tough. I think now people can play music during it. They're Twitch streaming, so they're going to be playing their own songs while they hear the audio, while the music, like all that shit kind of happening. And I love Twitch. I know Corey from Free Throw is on Twitch. Bunch of dudes dudes from Nothing Nowhere. There's a bunch of people that are doing that, but it's like it lost that. It was almost like you were forced, which was sort of a interesting thing. Like, sorry dude, you're in the menu screen. welcome to whatever song.
Exactly. Yeah. I think having like games come out now versus back then when Spotify didn't exist, it was like totally different because now it's like, all right, I'm going to put on my own soundtrack. And back then it's like, here's what we made for you. You know, it's like a special little gift.
How about playing your music? How about playing music yourself and finding that? Because it's kind of parallel. It's like you're listening to music and finding out bands, and now you want to play it yourself. What was that like?
So I used to do this thing called School of Rock, which is like
totally know,
like like a little camp thing. So that's where I met the bassist Chase and our guitarist Parker. And Parker used to play drums for us for a little bit. He's the one that recorded drums on Melee, but since then he's kind of like, I don't really want to play the drums anymore. I'd rather play guitar. I'm definitely more confident in my guitar. So we switched him over to guitar, and then we added Jacob, who's our current drummer. And it was like a seamless transition. It was great. Super happy about that. But going back to like the beginning of like when I used to play music, I was just kind of like, all right, like trying to learn like cool chords from all these bands that kind of existed, because I'm like, all right, I'm trying to teach myself how to do this and teach. I didn't really take that many lessons. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, let me look at live videos and just see how their hands are holding the guitar and kind of learn from there, like what to do, and just kind of hear the sounds and like go from there as to like, okay, this is the chord that they're using. Now I can like kind of move it around and like make songs out of it a little bit. So that's kind of how I learned. I used to drum in a band in high school called Sleeping Pilots, and that was fun. It definitely kind of showed me where I wanted to go with music, though, because in that time I was kind of like a punk drummer in a like blues rock band. It just didn't really make sense. And I was just kind of like dragging the band to like faster and faster tempos and more like abstract stuff, when the song, like the main songwriter, was kind of like, all right, let's like take it down a little bit. Let's like make it a little slower and quieter. And I'm like, I don't got time for that. I really want to jack up the speed. So from there, I was just kind of like, all right, I'm going to make my own set of songs. And so the first Dogleg EP kind of happened from there, because I was just like, all right, I'll just mess around, record with these two microphones and this audio box USB that I have, and just see where it goes. I don't have any expectations or whatever. I just want to record it and put it online, and that's it. Nothing special about it, you know?
Tell the story about the name of the band real quick.
Broken Dogleg, the last song on the Bear vs. Shark record. I was like, Dogleg sounds like a cool name. I will Google and see if anybody took it, and nobody did. So I was like, all right, I'll take it.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, just kind of a tribute to them, just because like their playing style is so unique and so cool to me, and I've definitely like looked up to that and saw that as like a goal to achieve, you know? Like if you're playing in a band and you decide to just like hang from the rafters and like hang yourself upside down and continue to sing, like I am going to be enthralled by that, you know? Like that shit is cool to me. It's not corny, it's not stupid. It's cool as fuck.
And it's in your backyard.
And it's in your backyard too, yeah. You know? And same with like bands like At the Drive-In and stuff. Like when I saw their live performance, I was like, "Holy shit. Like where are the bands that do that?" You know? Like there's bands that go hard and stuff like that. But very rarely do bands like go hard performance-wise, and that just took me by complete surprise when I saw them, and I was like, holy crap, like I love it. I love it. I love it. I want more of it.
That is awesome. No, I agree with you. The seeing Bear vs. Shark and their performance, and then also I got to see At the Drive-In a bunch early on.
Yeah.
And then later, and just like it was why I got into screamo, which not the mid 2000s screamo, like the real shit,
like the classic stuff.
Yeah, that's what was so intriguing, is that like you guys are about to like combust inside of yourselves in the air and like disappear, but your song still stays together, your band is just as and it's just like that level of tension, that is my high.
I completely agree. That's why I super respect those old screamo bands, like especially like screamo bands that kind of find that middle ground between like just flat out all out chaos and trying to like keep it like still having tension and still having like a quiet moment that they build up to. Like God, Indian Summer had that one song. It was Woolworm or Angry Sun or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way that they play it took me by complete surprise, because everybody's like, this is the greatest screamo album ever, and me being a kid and finding it for the first time, I was like, screamo's just everybody yelling. And then I heard this and I was like, what? This is like this is like a trip. This is like a journey. This isn't just 100% all the time. And by the way, I still love going 100% all the time,
right?
And there's no problem with that, but it's like it was just interesting to see like, holy shit, like they're building to a 100%. They're building a 150% basically, which is so cool to hear musically, you know? It's so cool to hear, because most of the time it's either very soft all the time or it's very hard all the time, and it's cool to see dynamicism in a genre that is constantly like told to the public that it's like, oh, you know, it's just loud and yelling all the time. It's like, no, not necessarily, you know, there's some right. technique in there for sure.
Yeah, no, there's, yeah, I agree. So I would love how the hell, and this is my mission in Washed Up Emo, and I think it makes sense. How the fuck did you find that when, if you did use the word emo, and I want your thoughts on it, is it was toward one thing or whatever Kerrang or Rock Sound or whatever those guys were slinging. How did you
avoid
falling down? You could have fallen down that hole. I love those bands. I love a lot of those bands. But how the fuck did you find I Hate Myself when that was what was being pushed towards you?
So the thing is, I was very into pop punk at a time, you know, and I was like very into that sound, and I really liked that, and I was trying to grow up and like find new stuff, and from pop punk kind of transitioned to like the Bear vs. Shark, like post-hardcore side, you know, the post-hardcore that isn't like 2000s post-hardcore, right. But you know, like influenced by Fugazi and shit. So the real thing that kind of drove me to keep looking for those types of bands and keep like, I guess, respecting those types of bands and figuring out what emo really was kind of like just being able to hear it without any like any person telling you what it sounds like, you know, because like here's Bear versus Shark, here's Cap and Jazz, two bands that not really many people commented on at the time of like when I found like 2011, 2010, you know, like there was no big like media outlets that are talking about them at all. You know, they were kind of
other than Washed Up Emo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. which I did follow, by the way, back then when it was like 2013. I was, you know, I'm not kidding. I'm pretty sure I was following you from my personal account like a while ago. I remember that. But
all right, we're going to digress for a second. So how the fuck did you find this? Did you find Twitter? Was it Twitter? Did I make fun of someone?
No, you didn't make fun of anyone. Was it the podcast? I think it was just the website and just like in my search for like, okay, what is emo and like what is good emo, quote unquote, and like what is the real like definition of bands that are emo? Like definitely Wash Up Emo came up, you know? It was because there was no big media outlets covering it, but there were people that cared that were trying to like figure out, like get to the bottom of like, okay, like what does this music actually mean? Like, what is this genre? You know, like where did it come from? How did it become so popular in a different form? What was its origins? You know? So I was definitely trying to find like, okay, what is the origins? Because, you know, everybody's calling Fall Out Boy emo, you know? And I love Fall Out Boy. Fall Out Boy's great. Where did they get their influence from? Well, they came from hardcore bands. Okay, well, what other hardcore bands were there? Right. Well, you know, there's like all these other hardcore bands, but there's also a thing called post-hardcore. Well, what's post-hardcore? Well, you got to go check it out for yourself, but they got some roots in emo. Okay, well, now we're back to emo. How does that relate to Fall Out Boy? Well, it's a completely different thing now that we're talking about. So it's like, you're constantly like going through this journey of like, okay, like what am I trying to find here? So yeah, I think that like just number one, being able to listen to it by yourself and not really have any like premonitions or anything of people telling you like, oh, Bear vs. Shark is an emo band. Bear vs. Shark is like, is this one thing and one thing only, you know? It's like, no, they're whatever I'm going to think they're going to be. And what I think they are is fucking awesome. You know, it's like, I don't need to slap a label on it or anything. And then the second thing would be Last.fm giving you related artists, you know, giving you like kind of like a sense of like, here's the community that they were influenced by and the community that they kind of put themselves in, you know, which isn't necessarily the same as like the big all-time like Fall Out Boys and Yellow Cards and what have you that people were pushing, but it was like a more underground scene, which was super interesting and which I wanted to find out more about, which was cool. And I guess the third thing would be commenters, like people in the comments that are saying like, who are these guys? How do people not know these guys? And people that are like, this is the real shit, you know, like this is real emo or whatever they would say, you know?
Right.
Because like, that kind of definitely helped me, because it would be like real people telling me like, hey, this is the stuff that you should be looking for, you know, instead of like an article telling me like, oh, this is good. And I would use articles sometimes just to find new music to listen to, but it would be cool to see like a group of people that you could get involved with just right there in front of your face in the YouTube comments, just being like, oh shit, like this is a small little community of people that get it. And that was even exacerbated when I went to a River Shark show, one of the reunion shows, and everybody in there knew the words. Everybody was all like arms around shoulders. They got it. They understood. And I was like 20, 21. And all these people were like 30 to 40 right. year olds. And it was just like, who gives a fuck how old you are? You know, like you get it. You understand what's going on. You understand how to emotionally outpour yourself to this crazy fucking song. Like that's what matters. You know, it was just such a cool experience just to see like real people that understood rather than like
by
somebody
yourself.
Just being like, yeah, rather than being by yourself and rather than being like, here's the people that like this song, you know? And the funny thing is that happened a lot for bands like MCR, and that was kind of why I kind of like didn't give them the chance that they deserved at the time, except for the song like I'm Not Okay, which was in Burnout, and I fucking mm-hmm. loved that song, but I didn't dig into them more because it was like so many people were like, oh, they're emo, they're this, so the only people that like them are wear all black and all this shit. And now I'm 23 and I'm like, fuck it. I wear all black. I think right. that's sick as fuck. I don't give a fuck. And I finally sat down and I listened to Three Cheers all the way, like not too long ago. Like, I think it was like a year ago by now. Like that was when I actually sat down and listened to it. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this shit is so good. Like that, like, why didn't I just listen to it and not listen to what other people told me to, you know, right. like this shit is good. And I don't have to care what other people said. And nowadays they're doing retrospectives on like, oh, MCR was actually good. We were wrong, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, well, you know, like why did we do that from the start? You know, if it was good the whole time, like, I think it's just silly, you know, it's just, you just let it speak for itself. Let the music speak for itself.
I think it's hard, and this word itself, and it kind of brings up a couple things that I want to have your thoughts on, is like the word itself has a connotation to it. No one wants to be associated with it.
Right.
Unless you're making money, unless you're DJing.
Right.
And there's like the marketing about it. And yet, I think sometimes the fan, I mean, I remember, you know, if it was whatever the main out, like mainstream media, you know, if you say this word, there's a laugh, there's a giggle, and
right.
it's actually serious and not a joke, but it's sort of marginalized. Right. And that right. doesn't happen with indie rock, punk,
right.
even, you know, punk, you don't just think Blink 182, you think Ramones,
right.
you think, and so I think as everyone says, it's, you know, there's always, you know, emo's not dead, it's back, it never left.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping yeah. over time it turns into people know that there's waves, and even hearing you say like, we knew it was this, but then I looked to this, and hopefully over time that yeah. happens, like punk. But for you, does it feel weird that you had that association, that word associated with your band?
No, honestly, no. Like the thing with how I wanted our band to be perceived, I guess, was basically like, if you think it sounds like this, that's fine. You know, right. that's, I don't really care. You know, like I don't want to force a label down somebody who's listening's throat, you know, because that circles back to what I was saying earlier about like, that happened to me with like MCR. Somebody said exactly what they were, and I'm like, okay, well, I have these premonitions about it, so I'm just gonna not dig as far as I want to into it because somebody said they're pop punk or they're emo or they're whatever. You know, it's like mm-hmm. I want somebody to just listen to it, and then if they think it's emo, good. You know, if they think it's pop punk, that's fine. As long as it's they're categorizing it for themselves and not somebody else doing it for them, because I don't want that to happen, you know? I don't want to tell you what it is. Right. I want you to listen to it and have your feelings happen for themselves, you know? It's
And also I think from the standpoint of you would have loved the 90s because there was this sense of the show wasn't a scene. The show was a community. The show was a moment. And if it was an acoustic, and I know this still happens, but if we're talking about emo and punk and post, it was like emo band, post hardcore band, metal band, acoustic singer, and then another hardcore band. And yes, I might have walked outside for one of the hardcore bands. Like, all right, I'm done. I don't need to see Brothers Keeper. I'm good. I'll go outside and I'll come back in for whatever. Yes. But that idea that there wasn't a commodity to it yet. It didn't turn into a marketing term, and it was just this is kind of band, and that's why I always think about like bands like you guys that come up and like I've always like Washed Up Emo. Yes, it says emo in the title, but like I'm just more like underground punk hardcore. You know, you're screaming like your aggression, and you're not trying to sound like the radio. That's when I'm on board. And so hearing you guys, hearing the sound and being like, fuck, I hear hardcore, you know, I hear punk, I hear, and again, I guess it goes back to that when you're coming up and having these, seeing those things happen where a sound becomes a big thing. Was it hard to avoid or to not get bogged down into what was kind of happening in the moment? Does that make sense? I don't know if I over-explained it, but it's just like you guys coming up and having all these influences, then getting to hear everything, but wanting to do your own thing. It seems like it's fucking noisy, just like my question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that I guess like it was more after we put shit out that would be like kind of the bogging down feeling, you know? It's like when we're recording and we're writing, we're in our own zone, you know? Right. We're not really listening to like up and coming music. We're not in tune too much with like what's new. We're focused on what we know and what we want to make, and like that's on our minds 100% of the time basically. So by the time we're done, we're like, okay, here's what we have and here's what it is. And then people will tell us, "Oh, this sounds like this. This sounds like that." I cannot tell you how many times we've gotten this just sounds like Joyce Manor over and over and over again after we've released like Melee and like all the other records. And I would tell people straight up, I've never heard a single song by them like after the release of Melee. And then I'd go and listen to them and I'd be like, shit, you know, maybe they're right. Same with Title Fight. To this day, I still have not heard a single like Title Fight record like in full. I've heard songs and I've liked them. But I would never say like, oh, this sounds like us, you know, like I would be like, I kind of get it. But it's just interesting to see because it's just like, I don't want to make something that's like happened before. I want to make something that I like, you know, I want to make something that I am proud of and that I can show my influences on my sleeve, you know, and I want to make something that's just good, you know, and if it sounds like something else, then okay, you know, all music basically sounds like something else, you know? There's no way to not sound like something else, except if you want to be completely abstract and then alienate everybody from your sound.
Everybody.
And then nobody's going to listen to you.
I really like the way you said that because the bands, it's like you're kind of resetting me a little bit because you're right. Like you're putting this thing out and sure, someone could listen to it and say it sounds like Joyce Manor or Title Fight.
Yeah.
And like, I love some Joyce Manor songs. I never got into Title Fight. Like it's totally fine. And then, but people have their different paths where they go. But it is funny when you're like, I've never listened to that band, and you're telling me I sound like them. Maybe it's cosmic. Maybe it's something else. But it's just punk.
Yeah.
Or it's just
you know
loud like guitars or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing is like, I see it, the way I see it and the way I've kind of like, I don't know if come to terms with it is the right way to put it, but like the way I've understood it.
Right.
Just to put it into context, I don't mind being like told that our band sounds like that at all. You know, like that's great. I hope we sound like a band you like, you know,
yep.
like,
yep.
it doesn't matter. But the way I've understood it is like that was people's gateways into this type of music. You know, like those bands were major entryway bands for people. Like Joyce Manor's first record was the record for some people. And it was the one that people latched onto and were like, this is what made me get into punk music. This is a test of time classic, you know? Mm-hmm. Same with Tidal Fight. For me, it's Bear vs. Shark's first album. That's my record, you know? It's Crash of Rhinos' Distal. It's Fugazi's 13 Songs. You know, those are my test of time records. And, you know, like, it's a different entryway, but it doesn't mean that one thing is necessarily bad if it sounds like those entryways, you know? Right. It just means, like, that's where I came from, you know? I came from the modern baseball era or whatever, you know? Like, some people can say that. And I don't know. I've only listened to, like, one or two modern baseball songs myself. Like, I just have a different way of entering it. But we're still in the same space. We're still making the same type of music.
We're still at the same show.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
Right.
And it's just, like, one of my least favorite things to hear about, like, any type of music, but especially ours, is, like, this sounds like an artist I like. I don't like this band. You know? It's like, what? Like, what? What? Why? If it sounds like something you like, then just enjoy it, you know? Like, quit trying to, like gatekeep yourself, you know? It's like, if this sounds like a band that you like, just enjoy it. And that's what I did when I was super into The Strokes. I was like, oh, I found a billion bands that sounds like The Strokes, because, you know, back in that time, in the 2000s in indie, everybody wanted to sound like The Strokes. And there's no problem with that. And all those bands, retrospectively, are really good. You know, they're good and they differentiate themselves from The Strokes in a lot of ways. But most people at the time listened to it and were just like, this just sounds like The Strokes. You know, this is nothing.
It was like that surface level, like they listen to one song and move on. And I talk about that sometimes, where there's fans of a song, album, and band. I'm definitely like a ride or die. Like, I am just like, if I'm in on a band, like, I will really try if it's an album that it doesn't connect or something. So the way that you're describing that makes a ton of sense. And the Strokes thing is funny, too, because I was in New York around that time. I was your age. And God, I just said that on the podcast. Fuck, I'm old. I promise you, Alex, I feel like I'm 25 still. I promise. But that was playing, and I remember, you know, them playing shows, and there's this excitement, and then everyone's a copycat band, and then some things pop out, like you got to see Interpol, you know, and then when you first heard that, you're like, oh, shit, you know, this is what's coming. So it was just kind of fun to watch those things pop up. One funny Strokes thing is they played a secret show at a club called Mercury Lounge as the Shitty Beatles. Do you know that reference?
No.
Wayne's World. There's a movie, Wayne's World, which is like a, used to be an SNL skit, and they can't turn it into a movie. Myers and Dana Carvey. They go and see the Shitty Beatles. And
that's
it's
pretty
funny. It's very funny. So I thought the Strokes doing that was great. But they, you know, that, like you said, like they hit a chord, and everyone wanted to copy that chord, but then they were kind of doing their own thing on top of it, which was the scene. And I think you being open to hearing those different sounds, and you're, like you said, not just saying, oh, that sounds like the Strokes, I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I see a lot of parallels with that kind of time period and like the current emo crop, you know, where it's like, yes, there are bands that do blatantly kind of copy other bands. So what, you know, like they're all making music. And the other thing is that all those bands in the 2000s, they were like pushed by labels and stuff like that, you know, like they were way bigger than any of these like small bands that are literally started in basements, just trying to sound like other bands that they like, you know? I feel like it's just kind of silly just to be like, those bands aren't good, they're not good. And it's like, you know, this has been done before time and time again through years and years of music history. Is a musical act comes up and everybody wants to sound like them, you know? That's just the inevitability of music itself. So like, ride with the flow. If you love that type of sound, go for it. If you don't like it, go listen to something else.
Yeah, it's almost like we're, I think, I feel really lucky because I thought as a term and a genre and a feeling that emo would kind of, like, when I was doing the website, when I first started, no one had articles about Sunny Day Real Estate. No one had articles, right. And I was writing about them, or I was writing about Elliot and these things. And mm-hmm. yes, there's yep. now a bigger internet, and there's YouTube and Wiki and all these things. But back then, you know, the first line on my website when I made it on Blogspot, it was like, if you search, I searched emo on the internet and nothing came up. That was the line.
Yep.
And yep. now, obviously, you're exposed and you're able to experience it. But I think from a standpoint, it's great that we're in this time because bands are yeah. saying, I love Bear vs. Shark, which makes my fucking day.
Yeah.
Or other yeah. bands saying, like, I know Fugazi. And that tells me that it's working. And I guess the biggest thing that offends me is someone says emo is dead or emo is back. It's neither. Right. It never left.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I think it is kind of the fault of age sometimes, you know, because mm-hmm. when I was recording the first EP, there was no community that I was a part of. There was nothing that I knew. Everything was kind of online. And even then, Twitter wasn't really a big spot for, like, all the DIY kids to really, like, go and congregate and talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. I was literally thinking I was just going to throw this out into a void and we'll see if, like, people like it, you know?
Wow.
From there, I went to college and then it was like, okay, I learned about Metal Frat. I learned about, like, the bands from Metal Frat, like Brave Bird, like Pity Sex, like all those, mm-hmm. all those bands that were kind of, like, small but had a following. And from there, as I got older, I was like, okay, there's a community that does exist. You know, there are people that are there to help foster this type of community and make shows happen. But I just don't know it exists because I'm literally 16 years old. You know, like I don't know anybody. And so as I was, like, 17 and 18, and then I came around to, like, actually helping to run shows and actually helping to, like, do some of the, like, actual legwork of stuff, I was like, okay, like, I get it. I get where to, like, find this stuff now, but it's more like second nature to me now. Like, I had to work to find it. It wasn't just like, oh, you know, like, you can go on Twitter and find any DIY band you want to talk to and now you're friends. It's like, right. No, that didn't exist. You had to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who was a part of this group, and then you could kind of find your way in there. And I think it's really cool now that people all around the world, anywhere they want, can go on Twitter and find a community, because I would have loved that when I was in college and when I was in, like, end of high school, just trying to find, like, hey, who are some friends that I could go to, like, shows to? Like, who are some friends I could go to the World Is show, you know? Like, I'm just going to go alone, I guess, you know, because I don't really know that many people. But in college, it's like, okay, or it's a secret club, you know, and the only way to know when the shows are happening is if you know a guy. And it's like,
right.
No, now we can just be like, okay, here's when the next show is happening. Come through. Come hang, you know? Right. And it's like, I know.
I wish you were in high school when I was in college. I would play, I did the college radio station in college, and I was playing mm-hmm. records, and high school kids would call up. And
oh, nice.
And I actually played Newfound Glory really early on, because the only reason I bought it is because he was in nice. Shai Hulud. I love Shai Hulud. Yeah. And I was like, well, of course I'm going to check out his new band. And I remember mm-hmm, playing mm-hmm. it, and these kids called up and they're like, we want to go to the show. And this is illegal now, but I went and picked him up. Like, I literally went to their house and was like, let's go to the show, and brought them home. And I still talk to them. Like, a bunch of the people that I used to pick up in high school that listened to my radio show, and we would go nice. To shows. And that's probably illegal. Like, you can't, like, yeah. someone get, you definitely get pulled over for that now. But that, yeah. that was like, they were searching like you were searching. And they right. were searching the dial, and you were, you know, you didn't have even a search place to do that. So it's interesting to hear your search is just like those guys were.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it wasn't really, like, the easiest thing to find.
Yeah.
But I knew it existed somewhere, you know? Like, it was somewhere. I just needed to find the right people. And luckily enough, somebody from Metal Frat like found the record that found the EP that I put out, and they were like, this is cool, you want to hang out? And I'm like, that's awesome, you know, like I'm glad somebody reached out to me. But like, you know, it's not every day that would just happen for anybody who like is just somebody that just wants to find the scene, you know? And so I'm really, really, really happy about how it's kind of evolved to like, okay, now everybody knows where to go.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to be involved can just kind of like hop in and join. And that's
right.
Cool.
It's,
that's
it's
super
kinda like
cool.
Leveled it. It leveled the playing field a little bit.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
So how's it been with the new record? And I think it's just, I mean, I'll bring up that, you know, I do a yearly Washed Up Emo Awards, 7th annual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't vote. I just say, pick a band. I don't tell them.
Right.
I don't have pick by number. There's no editors. There's no writers. It's the fans. And
right.
You guys dominated.
Yeah.
was that pretty nuts? Or were you like, oh, fuck, Emo Awards, we won? Please
that,
be honest.
That was very nuts. I am, whenever I talk to my friends about like what's going on with the band, like they're always like, you guys are getting like boosted everywhere. It's really cool. It's really awesome. And a lot of the times I'm like, well, you know, like the only real boost that we got that wasn't like almost a little bit backhanded was like Pitchfork, you know, like they gave us the best view music. They gave us the high score. That's great. That's awesome. Totally unexpected. But like, other kind of review sites were like, we didn't put them on our year-end list. It wasn't that good. It was blah, 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 whatever. But the cool thing was like all of the fans that were on Twitter and in comments that were talking about us. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, that's way cooler than a critic saying we're cool, you know? And no disrespect to Ian or any other critic that like has boosted us and helped us get to where we are. But like, it's cooler to see that like the fans are like, yeah, we get it. Pitchfork got it right. Or like whatever they would say, you know, it's like, it just feels very homegrown and like very like, I guess, natural for us, because that's normally how we would get fans, is from people talking about us. Like we never had people boost us before. We would just play as many shows as we could and play as good as we could, so that people could see us could be like, holy shit, who are these guys? You know? And in a time where we can't play any shows at all, it's really cool to see people just kind of being like ride or die for the album online, and just being like, yeah, this band's awesome, and just kind of sharing it around with word of mouth over Twitter. That's super awesome. So when we saw all the Emo Award stuff, I was like, wow, that's so cool. Like, I'm so glad that it's the fans that get it, you know? It's the fans. And that's the cool thing, is because like, we didn't get on some year-end lists for like the critics polls, but we did get on it for like reader polls. So we're like, yeah, like we're big with the fans, and that's what matters, you know, is that the people like it. And so right. I'm really happy about that. I'm really proud about that. I'm really excited that people get it, you know? Like I never would have guessed that people would have gotten it in a million years, because like I said before, like, we were expecting like a Bear vs. Shark treatment, where it was like, male, you know, we might not get the respect now, but maybe in like 10, 15 years, somebody will stumble upon it and be like, this is awesome. This rocks.
Mm-hmm.
We don't expect it, but it's like, people seem to have got it right off the bat. So we're like, damn, like we're extremely grateful for it. Like just completely in awe anytime somebody's on Twitter and is like, yo, just found this band. They're super cool. And I'm just like, wow, thanks. You know, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, I think I love that you say that. And I agree with you that, you know, and these reviews and things, those are great. And those are bumps, as you said, but it's a bump. It's not this like sustained thing. And there's a lot of times where people like gravitate to that and they think they've made it. I remember this is a Equal Vision story, which again, I remember these bands thinking that they were like, oh, well, we got the same stuff Circa Survive got, so we're good to go. And we were like, no, you didn't write Juturna. You're not Anthony Green and fucking Brendan and all those dudes together. Like, you did. So it was this sort of, you get these certain things and then you kind of rest. And I'm always like, man,
Right.
You gotta still press the pavement and figure out what's next. And so your thoughts around like, yeah, that's great to get the score, but you almost had a different score. And that doesn't happen with one voice. That happens with like back to the community.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is like, sometimes those good reviews kind of serve as like a negative for some bands, you know, where it's like, oh, this is just a Pitchfork band. Like they got a high score, but they don't deserve it. Like, and then the crowd reaction will usually be like, no, you know, this band isn't that good. You know, they're just being touted by this site. Like, it's not like they actually have any talent or anything. And that is the one thing I never want to hear about our band, because like, right as we got the score, we're like, all right, we're practicing right now. Like, we are going to kick it into high gear so that whenever shows come back, we're going to show them that this record may have been like a 8 point whatever, but our performance is going to be a 12. You know, like our performance is what matters, and that's what sells people for sure. And that's what we put our all into. And not to say that we don't put our all into the songs, but like we are not letting up just because, right. Oh, you know, they said something nice about us, you know, like, and like, again, props to Ian, props to the people that get it. Love it, love it, love it, love it, and appreciate it. Could not thank them anymore. But that doesn't mean we're stopping anytime soon. We're just looking at like, all right, how can we make the next record even bigger and better? You know, like, how can we make the performances even bigger and better and live up to the hype that's going on when things come back and we can actually play live in front of people's faces? You know, how can we melt their faces, basically? You know, like, it's
totally,
it's, yeah, yeah, that's the idea of kind of slowing down and sitting back is just not in any of our heads, like, at all. Like, that's just not how we operate, because like, every single ounce of success that we've gotten has been through working our ass off. And so we're like, all right, if this is where we're getting, because we're going crazy, we're going to keep going crazy. You know, we're going to keep making it happen.
I love that. I want to say, John wrote some funny stuff that I want to tell you without any editing. I was like, hey, I'm talking to Alex. And he's like, cool. That's so awesome. They're good dudes. Hey, tell him I want our royalties for the name use. Okay. I did that. And he said,
God damn it.
And this is everybody listening. This is John Gaviglio from Bear vs. Shark and Bars of Gold. Also a huge Detroit Pistons fan. So whenever my Celtics beat his Pistons, I always like to text him. And then he goes, Alex is such a nice guy. We played with him once.
Yeah.
Make sure you emphasize how much he personally owes me.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, okay. And then, frankly, I'm surprised how big they've gotten in a good way. Good things happen to good people. And then he goes, oh, wait, are you interviewing him right now? Whoops, sorry.
Aww.
That's what he said.
Oh, man. Yeah, I honestly, like, John is so cool. Like that, again, I will never forget that little get-together that we had at that sandwich shop. Like, that was just one of the nicest things. And those little things in music where, like, those big people that you look up to are so nice to you, like, that sticks with me for sure. I had a similar experience with what band was it? Great Big Pile of Leaves, where I DM'd them on Twitter. I was like, hey, it's a sold out show. Is there any way I can get in? Like, I'd love to like buy you guys a shirt or something if there's any way I could get in. So they put me on the guest list, and then I came in and like, I bought like a bunch of their merch to like make up for not being able to buy a ticket and everything. And they were so nice about it. Like, it was just so cool that they like just did that just for some random person like me. And I was just like, you know what, if I have ever in a band, that is how I want to operate. You know, that is how I want to treat any fan, you know, because it's a privilege for them to come and see us, you know, like that's that's just so cool. And it's just crazy to me, because I totally do look up to John for sure. And I was hoping I wouldn't get asked about royalties or anything like that on the band name, but
no,
looks like we're gonna have to pay back at some time.
No, he's fucking with you. No,
yeah,
but that's
yeah, I know.
But you saying that, and that's what I picked up on when I would watch Fugazi, or when I would watch people at shows,
yep.
and the people that I watched treat me. You know, I was a dumb college kid, and a band mm-hmm. put me on a list, and I got to stumble through 45 minutes of interviews, and it's the worst thing that no one will ever hear. But now
right.
I interview people for fun, and it's turned into, you know, and so those things of you doing that and picking up on that. It's amazing. And I, you know, there's going to be someone that you meet along the way. You might not even realize it, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like it's weird to be put in that type of position because like, I don't, especially with how all of the success that like the album has gotten online, like it just doesn't feel like a real like situation, you know, like it doesn't feel
right.
like it's like, oh, you're a super popular band now. It's like, no, I don't feel like that. I'm sitting at home in my bed, you know? I'm not really doing anything,
I'm bored,
you know?
Talking to washed up emo. Like, seriously.
No. But like, it's just the fact that this virus is going on, and the fact that we can't see people like face to face and like see how they react and like talk to them and be able to like interact with them and everything. It's weird. It's different. It doesn't really show me like, oh, you've made it, you know, you did it. You're big and popular now. It's like, I don't feel like that at all. You know, like I feel like I can just talk to anybody, and I'm pretty sure I'll always feel that way. Like whether it's a fan or it's just like somebody that like really likes us and sends us a nice note. It's like, That's cool. I'll reply to him. It's not like I feel like, oh, I'm too popular and have too much time to do that right now. You know, it's like, no, I'm going to talk to everybody and it's going to be cool. But yeah, like every time I think of like somebody that messages us, I'm like, you know, this could be me, you know, this could be like where I was, and maybe they grow up and like they make a band that's really cool and they do it, you know, they go and make cool music, and you want to respect them. You want to respect anybody that is coming to listen to what you have to make, you know?
That's, yeah. And I think awesome. you're the way that you're describing this, you know, it's almost like I wish I could carbon copy you. And I know that people will. And that's why, I mean, I talked about emo surviving. I think it's this idea and ethos that wherever you came, wherever you kind of put together and you're learning about it, here's some tools and here's on how to sort of indulge in this, and
right.
it's for you and it's okay. And maybe they are in a school and they can't find anybody that's down with stuff, or they're not
right.
or they're in a situation where shit is bad.
Right.
And they're able to be in a space where there's other people that they can connect with. I mean, it was weird in high school. Like this is before, I mean, again, grandpa talking here, it was like going to the show. I was like, a kids in my high school were like, what do you mean? You know, people from that town. Like,
right,
and I was like,
yeah.
well, I met him at the show, and it was so foreign. And I
yeah.
think that you feeling that way now, it's almost like you're on this island, and your people are, you know about the band, but you've never met them. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, I feel like you guys, it's, yeah, what a weird time to have a record and this happen, and you aren't able to do two nights at Bowery, you know, or whatever
exactly.
the venue is, you know?
Yeah, it's just weird. And it's weird because, like, again, like, all the fans that we've ever gotten were from playing in front of people. It wasn't from, like, massive online promotions or anything like that. We had
right.
no idea how to use Twitter or anything like that. We had to learn how to use Twitter and Twitch and all that stuff for this year specifically. Like, before then, we were just kind of like, all right, fuck it. Like, maybe we could post on Twitter like a meme or something, you know, it could be funny, but nowhere near as much interaction as we're doing right now, because we have to do that to actually survive as a band. And so it's just weird. It's just different. It's just not like any of our nature, because we're all very like proactive in terms of like trying to get and play shows, and always have been. And like, even when we were younger, like, like just starting out, like friends would tell us, like, you shouldn't play that much in this area, you know, like you should only play like once a month in Detroit. And we're like playing once every week. And we're like, well, if we play more shows, more people are going to see us, whether you like it or not. And it helped, you know, it was good. But we definitely like tried to make that happen as much as possible. So now that we can't, it's like, shoot, like, how do we keep going? How do we keep doing stuff? Keep people engaged. And I don't know. It's we're just hoping that things can get better soon so we can do that. Because we've done online stuff, but it's totally not the same. You know, it's not the same as being there.
You know, you guys seem to have gotten a lot of those people, not just myself, but others to kind of say, like, this is fucking cool. And they don't really talk about bands or that much. Did you feel that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, that's awesome.
It definitely felt like especially the Pitchfork review, that felt like super special, because a lot of people were saying specifically about that, like, this is crazy for an emo or an emo adjacent record. And I was like, I was proud of that. I was like, dang, like, we did it, you know, like, we did it. We kind of made it. That's crazy. Like there's a bunch of records that they didn't give that high of scores to that I would, you know, but that's awesome that we got it. Like, I would have never guessed that in a long time. I would have never dreamed that. Like, obviously it's like, oh, you know, I hope that happens, but it's like, never would have saw that as a reality. Just so every day I'm always like, how the fuck did we do that? How do we pull that off?
That's awesome. Well, I hope you guys, you know, I know that one day people wear masks and not fucking storm the Capitol.
We'll be back at it. That happens too.
So funny that John texted me back during that. That was so fucking nuts.
Yeah, that's so cool.
They were so much fun. I'm just saying, like, you, like, when people ask me, they're like, what band did you wish became big that you worked? And it's always Bear vs. Shark.
Yep. I felt the same when I found them. I was like, how the fuck don't people like just know about them? You know?
Do you know why?
Like, it felt like a Michigan secret. You know?
Yeah, do you know what happened? Is I think Equal Vision, I won't bore you too much, but like Equal Vision at the time was such a hardcore label. And we had another band called The Snake That Crossed the Crown. And if you haven't heard them, they're fucking brilliant. And it's, I always say Bear vs. Shark and The Snake That Crossed the Crown, their second Snake Across the Crown record is like monumental. It if it was on Sub Pop, it would be as big as Wilco. That's how fucking great this thing is. So if anything, go check that out, and then you're gonna tell me like that's a great. Let me know what you think of that record. But the same thing with Bear vs. Shark, where I think because of the timing, and it was 07, 06, 05,
right.
Like that wasn't their time. It was. Like, I feel like if they came out during the revival, it would have been fucking over. Like, feel like they were a little bit before, they were after the 90s, but before the revival, they just happened to be stuck in that era when you needed to wear a white belt and tight pants.
Yeah, they were definitely in, like, this interesting transitional period, which is what made them so cool, you know? It's what made them so interesting is that it's like... It was literally like 03 or so, or 04 or whatever.
04, right.
And it was like the things that were happening in 04 were like, you know, pop punk was kind of on the rise, you know? Like it was kind of like transitioning to that like mallcore type stuff, you know? Like it was, or at least like getting ready for it, you know? So here comes this crazy, like, hardcore
weird
adjacent
thing,
like, weird fucking band to fucking kick your teeth in, basically. And it's like, what? Who are these guys? This is so cool. So, yeah, I just feel like the focus was, like, really shifting towards, like, you know, it's something more produced, something more, like of a pop angle for some reason. And like, they were definitely not, like, going for a pop angle in any respect, you know? They had their own idea of what they wanted to do.
I even had the dates wrong. It was 03 that first record came out.
Wow.
And Terror Hawk was 05. For some reason, I thought it was 07. No, you're right. It's 05. So, but you're right. That was still, you know, post-Dashboard, post-Jimmy Eat World. Like, it just got to be this frenzy. And something like Bear vs. Shark on a hardcore label, when the indie rock god should have, like, the punk god should have been all over it, just somehow just sort of, like, I don't know, dissipated.
Yep. It kind of, you know, like Cap and Jazz, I think, kind of suffered the same fate, where it's like they should have been absolutely taking off and doing like everything, but they kind of just dissipated. But their influence still is far and wide, you know, like all the bands want to sound like them, but for where they were at their time, they were respected, but it wasn't like they were the biggest thing on the block and the next thing to come up in the scene, you know. It was just like they were a cool ass band that people really liked,
right?
And that was it.
No, it's, which, it's funny too with like, you know, like American Football, no one paid attention when that record came out in 99. If you listen to Matt Lunsford's interview that I did, like, he was just like, put it out and no one really cared.
that was the end of it, you know.
And
it
then
just, oh,
fucking
there it is.
Internet nerds found that song.
Yep,
and now it's a meme
exactly.
for life.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of happening now with Cap and Jazz a little bit, you know, because like,
really tell me
like there's a couple of bands that are kind of coming out that are like very Cap and Jazz, like Ogbert the Nerd. Have you heard Ogbert the Nerd?
No. Tell me
about
them.
They're kind of a newer band. We played with them in New Jersey. They're from New Jersey. Very Cap and Jazz inspired for sure, but they like combine it with like more group vocals, more like kind of like poppy hooks and stuff, but like they definitely have that like crazy energy. And there's another band called the See-Through Person, which is inspired by Glockamora, but also has a bunch of like Cap and Jazz energy and is like I feel like things are leaning faster and faster now, which I really like and which I was really looking to see when we were making the album. It's like, you know, we're playing with all these bands and they're emo bands and they're good, but like, where's the energy? You know, like I want the energy and I'll make a band with the energy, you know?
And dude, you and I, man, if we were in high school, we would have been in a band. You'd have been like, why does the teacher want to be in a band with me? No. but no, it's funny you talk about the Cap'n Jazz thing, because I remember interviewing Modern Baseball and them going like I had to like, they weren't into this stuff. Like it was almost like they were like, it just kind of happened. And it just, so to hear that like someone found Cap'n Jazz and there's kids out there that are like obsessed with it, like I was, and I even found it after.
Right.
Like that says something about that record that I don't think is talked about enough.
Yeah. It's like, I actually heard that same thing that you were talking about with Modern Baseball with some other bands. Like there are some bands that were like, I don't really listen to any like old emo. I just listen to the new revival stuff because that's what I like.
Right.
And I'm just like, that's crazy to me, you know, like that's wild, but it's also, you know, it kind of makes sense because it's like, that's where you're nearest. So that's where you get your influences from. But like, as opposed to like someone like me, who's like just digging through the back catalogs and like looking for like all the cool old shit that was happening. And it's like, you've never heard them before. Like go listen to them. They're cool. You know, it's awesome. It's just crazy to see like the range of influences that's happening for like the current like wave of bands that's going to happen. And I know people are saying like, it's a fifth wave, like, but I don't really know. Like, I don't really know what to call it. I mean, I feel like we definitely have elements of like old stuff and we're trying to combine it with some new ideas, but like we're hoping to really flesh out like the newer ideas on like the next record. But like this one was definitely like an homage to like what we like, you know, like
gang
that
vocal.
Was kind of, yep. That was the intention. You know, it wasn't, we weren't trying to like, create something that's completely like outside of everybody's wheelhouse, like you know the band Glass Beach.
Yes.
Yeah. Like what they're doing is like they're taking like emo and just being like, let's literally make it a musical and let's introduce like electronics and let's do all this stuff that's crazy and that's never really been done before in emo adjacent records, and let's just make it happen. Whereas like we're like, let's kind of take what's good and like polish it and polish it and polish it until it's sounding amazing, you know? So I think it's like, that's kind of the two directions that they're going, is like people that want to really, really like hammer out the classics into something that's new and fresh because it sounds so well performed. And then other people that are like, let's just go balls to the wall crazy with it and make something entirely different that nobody's ever heard, which I think is really cool. Cause it's like, it's two completely different mindsets, but somehow they join together in this cool fusion, and they still have a meeting point on the Venn diagram, basically.
Alex, I hope you have a good rest of your night, man. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.